Get your company to match your gift to KPFT today. You are listening to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT, Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Earthlings, welcome to Technology Bites. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome to Technology Bites.
Perfect.
Where everything goes according to plan.
Plan 9.
We have no idea what the plan is, but sometimes it does seem like it's being directed by Ed Wood.
The eighth first date didn't go too well. That's how that worked out.
I don't understand.
Not enough.
Plan 9.
Fuzzy sweaters.
We're on our Plan 9 from outer space.
Yeah. I don't know it well enough to quote it.
That was the entire backstory, is like, how do we get to Plan 9? And I think their entire synopsis was, well, the first date didn't go too well. So I think it can just like sinking into swamps with castles.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Lee Hutchinson is out tonight.
He's meta sick.
He's taking care of a beloved one, so he won't be here with us tonight. And Pete's not feeling good, but he's got to be here because Lee's not here.
I'm doing better than I was earlier in the day, but I'm not going to be hacking and coughing during the show. But
hacker,
not going to stop anyone from coming in that room though.
It might have been a draft is what got you sick, Pete. Take care of those,
okay, those freaky doors. All right, well, we're glad you could tune in tonight. Welcome to the show. We're going to be here until 10 o'clock for Technology Bites, and we invite you to come along with us. You can visit us online at geekradio.com. That's the website, also posted on geekradio.com, I believe. Do we have stuff up there for about what we're going to be talking about?
Not yet.
Not yet, but
soon.
We will. So pay attention. Just keep
one of us will need to type it in as we talk.
Just keep clicking refresh until something new pops up.
F5.
Tomorrow.
F5.
All right, so you can visit us online at geekradio.com. You can also hang out with us on IRC. The server is irc.cuckoo.com, and the channel is Tech Bytes. So you can join us there if you like. It's the show within a show. Let me see if I can...
Pound Tech Bytes.
And you can also call us at 713-526-5738 if you have something to contribute.
I just got opt in IRC. I'm all magical. I haven't been opt in a while. I still don't have my password recovered.
I haven't paid much attention. I wonder, why can't you just recover it?
I also don't have that email account handy anymore. There's a chain of fail involved in me not being opt in.
Chain of fail.
Song from the 60s.
Chain of fail. Chain.
There it is. PF Changs. All right.
Chain of fail.
We're going to serenade you through 2 hours of tech talk here on Technology Bytes. All right. So it's muggy and hot and terrible outside. Bear's just shaking his head.
No, well, yeah.
Your mustache tells the story right there.
Well, I've got new contacts, and one of my eyes freaked out. So I've been sleeping on one side of my face because the other side of my face swells shut at night and does all kinds of weird things. I've got medication now, so it's a lot better today. You know, you can't quite tell, but
that still doesn't explain.
No, I've been sleeping weird on one side of the mustache. And you wouldn't think you could do that, but I crimped and just did something weird to my mustache. So
You broke your Wookiee.
I broke my Wookiee.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, my facial hair is going through one of its, growth spurts and being all awkward. Speaking of awkward, nice haircut.
No, well, how long have you been out of prison?
Wow. This is my spring, almost sprung, but not quite haircut.
You're springing
just
forward
sprung.
With
sprung.
Clippers?
No, that's cool. It's got a 50s. It's somewhere at the... Is it 40s or is it 50s? It's 40s.
What?
That's the bald spot in the back. That's
that's
the 40s.
Kind of the high sides.
Okay, so Flickett is sporting a rather robust yet frazzled beard.
Can we get a profile?
Imagine
white walls.
Yeah.
Imagine, like, if you were, like, into, like, industrial music in the 80s or early 90s. And you would, like, shave your head all around the sides and the back, but you'd leave the top really long and wear it in a horsetail, except cut off the horsetail. That's kind of what it looks like, and then add a bald spot.
So you couldn't have pulled that look off in your 20s.
That's right.
Yeah, that's why I used to wear it in my 20s, and I will not be wearing it very much longer now.
I would say it looks like you're struggling to come to grips with something like your clippers.
I dig it.
No, it was because I tend to have odd patterns that I need to set for things to happen. And
male pattern oddness?
So I decided that...
Design patterns.
For that.
I decided that I needed an entire week of highs, at least 70 degrees. And I was really tired of my hair getting long. It was annoying me. I was ready to shave. So it was like all lining up. I was all excited. I was like, oh, yeah, Thursday or Friday, I'm going to get to do it. And then on the day I was going to do it, I checked the weather, and the last day had dropped to 69. So I was frustrated, so I couldn't do what I wanted to do. So I just did part of it. And then once all the 70s come back, then, then I'll finish.
Like style-wise or temperature?
The temperature, not the style.
The decade.
I kind of like it. Like if we ever get confronted by like a German biker gang, I'm going to hide behind Flickty because I think that haircut probably would get some respect.
Well, it's actually funny because I thought, this is kind of a goofy haircut because I don't like how if you have a full beard where it just like...
Terminates
it
at the top of your
ends,
ears.
Yeah, it just ends. I don't really, really don't like that. I don't like that look. So I was like, I'm going to do it anyway. I don't care. It's for
weird,
a few days.
With the headphones on, it looks like your beard meets your hair.
Yeah, the headphones actually takes away the whole effect.
So I was just like, yeah, I'm going to do it anyway. And then we go to the House of Pies, not on Pie Day, because I heard it was like 30 minute to an hour and a half wait for like the entire day.
Oh, because it was a big Pi Day.
Yeah.
It's one in a thousand.
So I went the day after Pi Day, so I missed Pi Day by 0.33%.
It's only an approximation. You're fine.
I was 3.15 instead of 3.14. And there was these people showed up, and this guy wearing a hoodie with the GitHub cat logo on it showed up. Same haircut. It wasn't quite, because it was a hipster version of it, where it's more like a fade and then like parted and fairly short on the top, but with a big beard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and mine was a little more.
You guys exchanged like a knowing glance. Go, man, 69 degrees.
No, I think that's probably how he normally keeps his hair intentionally.
I'm still fuzzy on the whole distinction between 69 degrees and 70 degrees. Is it a haircutting thing or is it an internal clock kind of thing?
I had to pick some reason. I think one year I did it because it was the first day of spring. But this time I had to come up with some other reason. So I said, I remember one year I said, I'm not going to do it until the low temperature gets above, it was like 65 or something. And it ended up being in like May. I couldn't handle that, so I had to change it. So I changed it to the highs for an entire week have to be in the 70s or above. Yeah.
Okay, so arbitrary is what I was.
It's pretty much arbitrary.
Random. Kind of like, that's what your haircut just strikes me as random.
It's kind of like paper, you know? It blows here, it blows there.
Good thing this show isn't random.
All right, so. It's the haircut show. We're going to just turn it into a whole male grooming program.
Oh, God.
God, no. A little off the top.
I can see Pete Manscaping inflicted.
Keep your ear there. Sorry about that.
Yeah, turn around pretty please.
That wasn't his ear.
Thanks.
All right. Well, what we'll do, since Pete is actually dialed in from San Antonio, we will go to San Antonio. Uh-oh. Do you have everything queued up? He is too busy contemplating his
hair.
He's
too busy rocking the new hairstyle.
Okay, I'm good now.
All right. Let's go to San Antonio and do the Info Shot with Peter Hughes. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Okay, well, as Jay mentioned a few minutes ago, the links for all the articles and stuff that we may potentially discuss upon the show, they are posted at geekradio.com. You can go load it up and follow along at home. You can pretend you can do the home game, the lovely home game of Technology Bites. And the other thing that's not on the links on the front, you have to listen to hear it, is perhaps you'll get to hear the new Weird Science bumper that I came up with today. We'll see. If we get to that part of the show, then we'll see if Flick can play it. But other than that, in very odd, interesting news, you've heard about the dark web, and you've heard about like the Silk Road, which was the kind of online black market for drugs and other illicit things, powered by Bitcoin. That was 18 months ago that was taken down by a swarm of three-letter agencies, you know. But then there was a new site known as Evolution, which took its place at the top of the dark web drug trade. The thing that's interesting on this one, though, and here's the problem when you're dealing with unregulated, you know, illegal, totally illegal from end to end situations, Evolution has dropped off the face of the internet too, but unlike Silk Road, there's no indication that law enforcement took them down. Instead, it mysteriously vanished, with rumors swirling that the administrators of it may have run off with many millions of dollars of its users' drug money. And no, I mean, doesn't it? It sounds like a plot for Better Call Saul or something. But no, apparently, over the past weekend, the massive anonymous market known as Evolution halted withdrawals of Bitcoin from its website, telling users it was dealing with technical difficulties. No, you can't have your money. We have technical difficulties. Then on Tuesday evening, both the market and user forum went offline, with no opportunity for drug buyers or sellers to pull out the funds they had stored in their Evolution accounts. The result has been a wave of panic that's shaken the online black market economy. You know, if you can't trust a black market drug dealer site with anonymous electronic money, who can you trust? Apparently, late Tuesday, a Reddit user named NSW Great, who had earlier self-described as an evolution drug dealer and, quote, public relations staffer, wrote a post to Reddit's Darknet Markets forum that claimed to confirm Evolution's administrators had in fact shut down the site's backend too and escaped with the user's money. He said he confronted Evolution's two pseudonymous owners, Virto and Kimball, who he or she says then admitted they were closing the market and stealing the funds. Isn't that sweet? Now the sad downside of this is, you know, this whole thing, you know, there are people who owe money to other people who don't take well to not getting paid back, as happens in the illicit world. And sounds like some of those people are not in a good way. So I'm sure there's like some kind of moral lesson in here somewhere, but it just, I'll leave it to you to figure out for yourselves what you think. In other news, T-Mobile, they had another announcement, sort of the Un-carrier thing. And I'm not promoting T-Mobile or any of that. I will disclose, full disclosure, I use T-Mobile, but the thing that I like about it, and the reason why I think what they're doing is interesting, is because it brings competition to a business that was desperately in need of it. Companies like Verizon and AT&T in particular need something to pull them away from their rent-seeking kind of, charge premium dollars for mediocre service approach to data and stuff. So they had their big event, their Un-carrier 9.0 event. CEO John Legere announced the Un-contract, commitment on T-Mobile's side that guarantees customers' bills can go down but never increase unexpectedly. This is sort of a reverse contract. Instead of you having a contract with T-Mobile, it's T-Mobile having a contract with you. It also locks in all previous Un-carrier movements and data packages as permanent. He says he's guaranteeing those rates for as long as you're a customer. The big thing that they're doing to help people, to be even more competitive, it's called Carrier Freedom, which is a new program that expands on the company's previous "we'll pay off your early termination fee" offer. They expanded that to cover up to $650 in any payments you currently owe Verizon or AT&T per line, and they'll do that for up to 10 lines. I think apparently the idea is so that people who are tied to upgrade plans like AT&T's Next and Verizon Edge could still switch. They also, previous T-Mobile Un-carrier announcements have included Music Freedom, which allows customers to stream popular music services without it counting against their data plan, and a Jump Early Upgrade program that led to kind of the AT&T Next and Verizon's Edge. On the plus side, the main thing is the more price pressure and competition pressure there is in the cellular world, I don't think that can harm – I think that can do nothing but good for people who use smartphones, and since that's a lot of people nowadays, it's not a bad thing. And then here's one that's sort of an odd, interesting headline from Wired that I found. So this obviously attracted my eye right away. Said, "No, really, the PC is dying, and it's not coming back." And that's not. That obviously gets your attention. It's not link bait. It's not like 10 reasons why the PC is dying and 5 hipster haircuts that you'll want to have while your PC dies. The market research outfit IDC has revised its prediction of PC shipments in 2015 downward. It's projecting a drop of nearly 5% this year, worse than its earlier forecast of a 3.3% decline. To put that figure in perspective, Apple sold more than 74 million iPhones during the last quarter alone at an annualized rate that would put iPhone sales alone, just iPhones, above IDC's prediction for the entire PC market. Now, Apple doesn't sell that many phones every quarter, but it's but this is a sign of kind of the crisscross of the trajectories as far as sales going up on smartphone devices and down on PCs. And it's not just in terms of the numbers of devices. The PC industry is losing money. The PC market shrank 0.8% last year to $201 billion. This year it expects that number to go up by 6.9%. But by 2019, again, this is IDC, expects the overall market to shrink to $175 billion, or less than the amount of Apple's 2014 revenue. That's for all the companies to share. It's just interesting to see, you know, so basically the way people are spending is they're spending more money on other devices to access the internet and those other things and than they are on PCs and laptops, because the price has not been continuing to drop. You notice that the prices on laptops and desktops have stayed fairly stable for the past few years. So let's see, anything else interesting on it? As Microsoft, Amazon, and Apple follow suit in spending unprecedented amounts on data centers, that may make up some money for Intel, but it does show how much the power dynamic has shifted away from your desktop and your laptop to that the power isn't with the companies that make the components that run computers, especially PCs. It's the companies that make things that users interact with that are building and profiting off of the future of technology. So there's an interesting one to think about. It's not going away tomorrow or anything like that, but it's interesting to see a forecast when Windows 10 is coming out, a forecast that the PC business is going to get is going to shrink instead of grow. In a year when there's sort of that kind of major operating system change happening. And finally, the Wall Street Journal has, and they've been pretty good lately. This is an Apple rumor. There's been rumors that Apple was going to create a television service for a while, almost as long as the rumors about an Apple-created television set. And, of course, we're all sitting at home watching those right now, right? But a new report from the Wall Street Journal suggests we may know more soon. The journal claims that Apple is going to be launching a 25 or so channel TV service for $30 or $40 a month that would have ABC, CBS, Fox, and various subsidiary channels like ESPN and FX. Apparently NBC is not on the list, partly because of conflicts with parent company Comcast. It sounds like Apple and Comcast had some kind of falling out. The previous rumors had been that there was going to be some kind of partnership with cable companies, combining their infrastructure and content with Apple's hardware and software. The journal says those plans are gone because of friction with Comcast. TV was a major focus for Apple's board event at media event last week. Tim Cook and HBO CEO Richard Plepler announced that the companies had entered into an exclusive partnership to launch HBO Now, which is HBO's long-rumored standalone streaming service. That's where you just get HBO by itself. It's not tied to a cable subscription or any of that. These new rumors suggest Apple is making similar inroads with other TV networks. Apple would offer this service on the Apple TV set-top box as well as through other iDevices, although the Apple TV hardware has not been refreshed in 3 years. Apple did recently reduce the price from $99 to $69, which is lower than competing hardware like the Roku 3, the Nexus Player, or Amazon's Fire TV. So at least they're lined up competitively price-wise, if not with their device. So it means the door is opening up. You know, with this rumor, assuming it comes true, it means that the door is opening up towards more possibility for people to do the cord-cutting thing. I don't know about the rest of the guys on the show, but this past month I finally cut the cord. I dumped my cable service and have just gone to, right now we just have Netflix and Hulu. Something, you know, we've been watching the Sling TV, and I'm certainly watching this Apple piece with interest because that would add in a few channels that I don't have to have, that we decided we didn't absolutely need, but for a decent price, I'd pony up for. So Jay, you still have cable, or are you?
I do still have cable, and I'll tell you why I still have cable, because my wife, it's just not within her wheelhouse to navigate multiple services, like trying to. She could dial up Netflix on her iPad, no problem, but like trying to change inputs on the TV to switch between, say, the Apple TV or a Roku device. Even watching DVR programs, she struggles with that. I mean, it's unfortunate.
It's not low-hanging fruit. I mean, it's, you know, it's a lot of different layers, and you really do have to, you know, not only know how to operate each one of the layers, but you've got to go search out shows. It's not just all in one place, which is, I think, the biggest, you know, selling point for cable or that kind of subscription is you don't have to go hunt all over the place.
Right. I mean, ultimately, with cable, she can turn on the TV and dial up to the channel that she wants to watch and watch what she's watching.
Even with, you know, with that, and I cut the cord probably about 4.5 years ago, maybe coming up on 5, but even, you know, there are some shows that, you know, if you've got, you know, not even a service, but there's some shows, if you know to go to the, you know, for instance, like thehistory.com, you can stream for free. But at the same time, if you don't go looking, you can also pay a couple bucks, you know, on iTunes or other, you know, services for them. So that's been kind of odd, you know. I like to go search everything. I don't feel like if I find a show, that's my last stop, because it appears so many other places and there's a lot of disparity in, you know, how it's priced.
I think on the low-hanging fruit, though, imagine, you know, in Jay's scenario, if you have an Apple TV and so it's got the various iOS apps to it, if that's how you cut the cord and use it, then there's only the single device, just like with your cable box. The only downside is, of course, if you're using the DVR a lot, then they don't really say how these cord-cutting services would really work.
What I'd really like to see happen is for some way, I mean, Netflix, I think, has the best model in terms of content delivery, because you sign in, you pick the show you want to watch, and it's there. It's already there. You know, they dump the whole library or whatever, and you go and you watch what you want to watch. So you can kind of search the library. So I've contended for a long time that whatever, there needs to be some unifying thing that brings all these things together and puts it out to one output to your TV.
That's what everyone's fighting for right now.
I mean, and beyond that, the whole broadcasting in real time just needs to go, you know, it needs to exist, but it could conceivably go away. I mean, Hulu has some content, Amazon has some content, Netflix has some content, Apple TV has some content. You can go search for it. Then you have to decide, you know, like even when using Amazon Prime, I go and look for stuff and you get a lot of free stuff. But when you go search for a show, you have to pay attention. Is that free or is that one that they're going to charge me for? And inevitably, it turns out that the ones that you want to see that are any good are charged.
What they'll do is they'll get you hooked, you know, on the first season or so, you know, first two seasons of something good, and then the next thing you know, it's you're in charge land.
I wonder. Apple, I mean, they think about these things when they do it, and so I get that the kind of marquee thing is to say, oh, you know, we've got these 25 channels that we're going to bring in. But they've got to be doing more than that, because they can't just have live, you know, real time. That works for news, you know, because obviously there is something to be said. You know, if you're going to cut the cable, one of the places where it might be a big deal is some big event happens. You know, there's llamas running around in that one you could do with that. But no, like some big, you know, some major national type event. Well, happens.
A lot of news you can just get streaming.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter.
CNN, Twitter. I mean, there's well, with links, I mean, to other
there's
things,
there's a lot
it's
of people
almost
who
like
don't
watching
think
it
about
live.
That. You know, like Jay raised a really good point. You know, obviously, like kids, they're going to go to YouTube or some of those first instead of TV. But there's also a lot of people who don't think about it.
Well, we know that over-the-air signal is, you know, good and easy to get. And there's your live news right there. And I know on Roku, I've got the major networks free through a service through Roku. So I've cut the cable and I can get, you know, live news if I need it, if something's
happening. Well, I guess what I'm saying is for something like Apple, for the kind of cord cutter thing, there are people, you know, obviously the kind of, I guess maybe the biggest example wouldn't necessarily apply to the current, you know, group that we're talking about, but there are people who Fox News, if they can't have that, they're going to not get off cable.
Right. But
CNN or those kinds of things, kind of where I was going.
Well, most of the television shows, you may have to have like a cable subscription. You may have to, you know, like show, yeah, hey, I'm signed in with Xfinity. But most of the news shows, I've found that they just offer up a stream and you don't have to sign in. You don't have to register. They just want that out there. I would expect, especially Fox News just wants to spread their, you know, spread their gospel out there.
If you're cutting the cable, you're not going to have just one service. You're going to have multiple services. You're going to need to use online.
I agree, but that is not. That doesn't work for my family.
Some people, sure,
it does
definitely
not work in my house. And what I would like, also what I enjoy, the way that I approach television or broadcast media now is I time shift it anyway. I record, mm-hmm. I go through and I set up all my recordings and it records to DVR and I have my show, I have my stories and I watch them, you know, in my own time. So depending on what the lineup is, I have a weekly schedule of programs that I watch and I enjoy being able to see the commercials advertising the next whatever show's coming up. Is there a new show coming?
General Hospital as the world turns. Yeah.
Yeah. So, for me, if I could conceivably in my house do a cord cutting thing, but I need a way to DVR like TNT, AMC, mm-hmm. all the major broadcast stations, I need to be able to DVR that.
Well, that's where I wonder if Apple, you know, there's an opportunity, whether it's for Apple or somebody else who steps up, you know, maybe that the unspoken piece of their cord cutter thing would be that they give you that kind of on demand. So basically once it's been broadcast, then you can go and on demand it whenever you want. So then you don't have to DVR it because you can just say, okay, well, show me all the episodes of this show that are available right now, and it would show you that.
That's nice. I still like local storage. I mean, just because, you know, if you've got, like, especially with HD and especially with the state of, you know, Houston broadband right now, it's nice to not to have to be, you know, reliant upon, you know, having a really strong connection.
That's true. Well, that's another one where again, somebody could get smart and basically give you that ability to keep those have that local copy for a period of time so that you get that instant response or so that you can take it offline. You know, it seems like most places have kind of gone, they do the on-demand thing, like Netflix. I mean, obviously there's no way to locally store that, but it would be nice if you could. And the flip side, though, is the kind of cable DVR thing is kind of a, and it's not meant as an insult, but it's kind of like the old school version. You know, it's kind of industrial, like newspapers. So it's like the shows kind of come raining down, and you put out buckets to catch it so that you can have it later.
Yeah, it's just moving.
As opposed to on demand.
Yeah, everything is on demand now. I mean, that's the whole thing. The DVR is kind of dinosaur now.
Sort of, it's like you're having your own local server to deal with it. Now, it makes sense, you know, thinking of it as a local sort of caching server, that could be kind of cool, where it's basically picking up the stuff where, oh, yeah, you watched a lot of these shows, and so it loads them up in a way that you can't, you know, obviously I don't want you to be able to easily pirate them.
Well, Amazon's done that a little bit, and not to where you can, you know, put it on your every Android phone or on your laptop, but if you own, like, you know, the Amazon devices, you can, I think, have like two different downloads. So if you've got a Fire, what have you, you can download a movie for a plane use or for other things, but they limit it, and because they control the devices and because you can't, you know, load it up on a Linux machine and then get into it, they lock it down pretty nicely. So, and that's kind of a deterrent. That's one of the things I don't like, is because I own movies and TV shows on Google through Google Play. And I have stuff through, you know, iTunes, and I have stuff on Amazon. And, you know, just remembering, like, okay, what's where, and, you know, not being able to have everything in one consolidated library is a little bit of a pain, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, interesting, HBO Go, when they first came out with that one, that's tied to, you have to have a cable subscription. But one of the things that they said very early and have not taken it back yet is that they're not keeping track of the multiple logins on the same account. They are intentionally not keeping track of.
Yeah, I don't know anyone that has that. I need to meet someone. Although I heard also that HBO is flirting with the idea of doing subscription-based services, to where you don't have to go through a Comcast, you don't have to go through a cable subscription.
Right. That was announced at the Apple event last week.
Yeah. So
except right now it's exclusive to Apple iOS type devices and Apple
Roku and everybody else's.
So if you are interested in cutting cable and having HBO, that's great. But if you have cable, it's cheaper just to subscribe to HBO through Comcast.
I'm wondering, yeah, I'm actually, and this is a horrible thing to say as, you know, an early cord cutter, but I'm wondering if I shouldn't just go get a basic, you know, cable subscription. I haven't necessarily hooked it up just so I can get the logins to go watch stuff on, you know, history.com and some of the stuff that's, you know, now paywalled, not paywalled, but where you've got to, you know, log in with Comcast to show that, hey, I've got basic cable. I can watch this.
Right.
And it's not premium content. Yeah. I'm not trying to get a hold of HBO shows. I'm just trying to watch, you know, like Vikings and stuff like that. I don't think that's premium.
Like, I've got Vikings this season. I purchased it through Vudu, and you just have it waiting for you after it's aired. It's just sitting there waiting for you. So you can get Vikings.
As long as you can get Vikings, I think that's really the key to cord cutting.
Any care Vikings might get you.
Well, you know, our old friend Dwight Silverman did an article about his costs on his cord cutting, and it's kind of turning out to be a bit of a wash for him, it looks like.
I think it depends on how voracious you are in consuming content. Mm-hmm. I think if you do things pretty lightly and pick and choose what you watch, I think, you know, it's definitely cheaper to cord cut. But if you are a fairly heavy consumer looking to cut the cord and save any kind of money, I don't think it's going to work out in your favor. Depending.
Yeah,
I mean, you've got a fixed cost of, you know, call it $20 just with, you know, like the streaming Netflix account and a streaming Hulu account. And then say like you know, even a movie a week rental, you know, call that. So that's, you know, another, you know, three times another. So we're up to like $33. And then say you get, you know, a subscription or two of TV shows, that's, you know, say like $30 for a pass, and say like maybe you get one. Yeah, it starts to get up there in cable pricing, I think.
Yeah, see, I don't really watch that much TV. So I've actually never purchased cable ever. I mean, my family had it when I was, once it got it to our town, and so I had cable like once I got into high school or something. Didn't have it in college. And then after college, I never had it. I lived in a couple apartment complexes that had it for free, or had some channels for free for a while. But other than that, I've never actually went out and bought cable and paid for cable myself.
I had DirecTV with TiVo, and that was awesome. TiVo and I were friends.
I rented a place where the people provided, I think it was Dish,
mm-hmm.
but I never turned it on. Like, I wouldn't turn it on for months a lot of times. At one point, I started watching Sons of Anarchy, like in the second season, and then I started watching Walking Dead. So I would turn it on for those, like once a week for a few months. And then, yeah, that was about it. Now I'm just waiting. I have Netflix because I would go rent movies. I didn't really care about television much. I would go rent movies. And once Netflix started doing their DVD rentals, I did that. And then once they flipped their prices so that their streaming was cheap and their physical DVDs got expensive, I dropped physical DVDs and just went to streaming, which is kind of annoying because there's a lot of stuff that they have available on DVD that they don't have available on streaming. But I just didn't feel like paying that cost. So whatever's on Netflix, that's what I get to watch, or if it's over the air.
Well, hopefully there are enough people that are actually doing it now, and you know, we've got the term and it's out there and it's been out there for a few years, and maybe the cable companies, the content providers, will start paying attention and giving us, you know, pure online options.
Well, one thing that I think is going to be, as it goes forward and as more people cut the cable, is it came up from Flicted mentioning, you know, like Sons of Anarchy. If you've got the cable, you know, where it's just on and there's all these different people watching it, well, then you get a chance where there's that buzz about a show from the people who watch it, or even people just stumbling across it while they're flipping through channels. If more people aren't, if, you know, once they hit a certain tipping point, then they're going to have to start thinking about how do they get that show out there for free to get people to start to be into it.
That's what Netflix is doing now. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're kind of like annoyingly promoting like House of Cards and some stuff. It shows up on their all the pages and on your search.
Yeah, I noticed
results
that
and...
because you watched My Little Pony, you might like House of Cards.
Because you're on the internet, you might like House of Cards.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a little bit annoying, but that is how they got a lot of buzz for that, to get people to watch it. I know, for example, Marvel decided to work and go with Netflix, and so they're going to release, I don't remember how many episodes, it 11 or 13, they're going to release an entire new Daredevil series, like Year Zero Daredevil, all at once on one day. And so there's a lot of buzz like in the comic book community and stuff for that. So, I mean, that's another way they're trying to build buzz. And they mentioned it at Comic-Con, and they had promo posters for it. And
also known as the day no one leaves home in the comic book world.
Well, just think, though, as it goes along, they're going to have to, you know, there's going to be pressure to, after a season, to maybe put that first season out there on one of the streaming services, or put it out on a website where it's free,
like to build buzz,
or put out those first
season.
Few episodes.
Yeah.
That's the pattern I've seen, is they'll do the season before something big that ramps up that's going to be premium content, you know, like pay-per-view content. And that's the dated term, but, you know, where you pay to stream. They'll give the first season before. And just
what
kinda,
happens with the last season?
That usually gets free.
I'm still waiting on Sons of Anarchy season 7. I still haven't watched
it
yet.
Yeah, with my timing, usually I'll purchase the season, and then
problem,
2 days later, it's like, oh, it's now Prime.
It's free. It's a free show to watch live, and you can DVR it, or you can cut the cable and watch it when it eventually gets released to a free service. But shows like Sons of Anarchy and other programs that are very popular, the season that ends, that it comes out on for purchase DVD before you can stream it.
Right, but I'm a patient man.
I think we need to combine, you know, cord cutting and social media.
And cheap.
I have discovered an odd phenomena, though, that at least the way that I watch certain things is that if a show has been out for too long, or like, you know, I've been enjoying watching movies kind of stuttered. I don't go to the theater so much to watch a new movie, but I'll watch it when it, you know, maybe when it's released for like $4.99 on the streaming service. But if you wait too long, even when it's free, it's like you don't even want to watch it. It's just the technology and the production values and a lot of just it gets spoiled anyway because you're on the internet. If it's any good, it gets ruined because people spoil the plot.
And those graphics are so April 2014.
I still haven't watched any of the Game of Thrones, which I probably will eventually watch Game of Thrones, maybe, but I haven't actually watched any of it ever.
The other problem, you know, and this one adds to the cable providers' woes is, you know, I used to be sort of the ideal cable customer because we'd do the full-on package. We didn't do a lot of sports, but we did all of the movie channels. And the reason was then you could pretty much guarantee anything that was out, say, last summer, that you were going to get to see it within a reasonable amount of time.
Right.
Well, now Hollywood figured out that they make their most profit off of DVDs. They used to make it off the theater, so that, of course, they didn't want VHS, and so they fought that until they made too much money with VHS, and then they accepted it. And then DVDs they were really against, and now they figured out that's where all their money is, and so now they're forcing everything. They are not imaginative business people.
It's also because going to the movie costs like $14 now.
Bahaha. Even more, yeah, Flicted and I went to go see a movie, and we had to decide between like the normal movie and the 3D, and one of them was
IMAX.
It was expensive.
It was
IMAX.
Well, it was matinee price versus IMAX. It was matinee price versus IMAX. And I don't know if that was IMAX matinee. I don't know if they have matinee IMAX or not. But it was matinee was like 9-something, and IMAX was 19-something.
I was assuming the 19 was 3D with free popcorn and a food bar. But I could be mistaken.
Yeah, I was just like, that's insane. Like,
then once it's out of the theater, a lot of movies, you know, what I found is suddenly about 2 years ago, the movies stopped showing up they stopped showing up for a long time. Like Captain America, the second one, which was a big deal movie, that only just, I think only a few months ago, got onto like Stars or one of those. Before that, the only way to get it was was going and buying or renting a DVD.
Well, there's all kinds of rights managements behind the scenes and deals cut and things like that that I still don't completely understand. And that's why you see Netflix rotating out catalogs and different people rotating out different catalogs.
Yeah,
and
there's different contracts on different movies. And so they'll only be available for streaming for a certain amount of time.
But see, I had all the movie channels. Usually that meant that if one of them got a jump on the others, you'd just watch it on that particular channel. But it was on no channels. It was only on pay-per-view and DVD for 18 months after it was out of theaters. And that's because they want to force you. If you want to watch it, like Jay said, they want it to be where by the time it gets to those other services, you know, that you kind of were forced to buy it earlier so that you could see it when it was still valid. And I think long term, you know, that doesn't help the cable companies, because if their stuff isn't going to be, if one of their sources of content isn't going to get them movies, then because HBO and that got to be where it was like it was all these 80s movies, and you kind of go, you know, I actually saw some of those in the theater. I think, really up to see them on HBO.
I think cord cutting will definitely be the wave of the future in the not too distant future. People that are used to getting their content from alternate sources as opposed to broadcast or even cable straight up. But if you're my generation, and I think I'm a bit of an anomaly in my generation being as technical as I am, but my wife, who's a lot more analog, she has a mindset about technology that, you know, prevents her, or, you know, that she allows to prevent her from accessing a lot of these. I mean, she uses the internet, she uses email, she uses things like Netflix and the iPad and things that she can do, but she's not inclined to get in there and tinker. If the stuff doesn't work, then it stops.
Walk away or call Jay.
Walk away or call Jay. So, I don't think that's uncommon in our age group. People like us that are over 50, we're used to how our content, I mean, it used to be one box. You turned it on and it was broadcast live and, you know, in real time. And that's what you watched. There was no DVRs were, you know, not even heard of.
Well, even when everything's firing, I still don't have the patience for a lot of it, because I'll want to, you know, just watch a little bit of something, and I'll have like half an hour and not much more, and I'll fire it up, and it's like, okay, Smart Hub wants to update, and I update that, and then I get in there, no, the app I want to watch it with needs to update, then I update that, and then, you know, it's okay, now suddenly I have no time. Things are
The thing I see is the wave is moving on the cord cutting, in that kids, you know, we're moving out of, just like in movies, if you notice, other than the like big, you know, blockbuster type movies, they're making movies aimed at most of the people who are on the show, not necessarily listening. Hopefully we have a lot of young listeners, but
young listeners.
You know, we're not in the generation.
We,
you know,
used to have young listeners.
18 to 35 is who goes to movies, and it's probably less than that. It's probably more like 18 to 30 is the target, and so they've changed it. But the thing I see is, my kids, who are, you know, my youngest, who are in like junior high and high school, they stopped watching TV before we cut the cord. That was part of why we went ahead and did it, is because they weren't watching it anymore. Now, they were, my youngest figured out how to watch YouTube videos on the TV, but that's not really helping the cable companies.
Well, I think the same thing that killed, you know, like after school cartoons and killed Cartoon Day, you know, Saturday mornings, you know, pretty much killed that. It's like, you know, the ability to watch whatever you want to, not have to, you know, be confined to watch cartoons for an hour after school, you know, an all day glorious Saturday mornings. You know, those are all gone. I mean, the networks don't have to pander to kids and do that lineup of programming anymore, because kids can go watch whatever show they want to on YouTube or streaming services, or, you know, just play games that are interactive shows, you know, on the iPad. So I blame the new generation for killing Saturday morning.
Well, I think that the people who have a naked business interest in stuff like, oh, say the people who run Comcast and Time Warner need to be watching it, because if it turns into the only pipe they get to supply to your house for money is internet, and it gets regulated to keep it fair, they could have a real problem with keeping their profits up to where they want them to be. And it's happening now. The thing is, even prior to the regulations of that, it's been happening. And it seems to me, it's one of those where I feel like if it's gotten up to me, that means it's pretty close to the tipping point. Doesn't mean always, but, you know, I'm fairly middle of the road, and I'm not a youngster, and so it starts that starts being a sign that there's going to be a lot more people, that's going to be the next trend.
At least that's what I see. Maybe watching television isn't the future. Maybe there's some other kind of entertainment phenomenon that's going to come.
As they said in the Big Lebowski, virtual reality porn.
Yeah, my wife is totally on board for that. All right, well, we're coming up. Well, not that far away. What was the call about, Groovehouse? Nothing? Just a big nothing. All right, so we're talking a little bit this first hour, it looks like, about cord cutting, which is the idea of, you know, most people, when for their television, they subscribe to some type of service, which is either satellite or cable, is how most content is delivered, with a small minority of people that still just have rabbit ears and get broadcast television. So the idea is that now that so much is being made available online and through streaming services, people are starting to, you know, and the cable bills are getting so expensive, people are looking to cut those lines and find new ways of having their content delivered to their various devices, whether it's a television or a notebook computer or desktop computer or some kind of tablet device. And there certainly are a lot of things available, but it is a confusing mess to go deal with. And it's almost like I wish there was a new monopoly that would aggregate all the
podcasts. Yeah, a little bit. That's
kind of my Apple may be trying to give you your wish. That's what I'm wondering about. If that's part of what this rumor is leaning towards.
Right. Google's not going to let them do it. It's going to be a battle like VHS Betamax all over again, and it's going to come down to two or three players. And I think Apple's in a great position. I think Google is lining up with Android with the base to take them on.
They may form
other alliances.
Time Warner and Comcast don't show up in that list anywhere.
Yeah, they're kind of fossils.
Satellite has a chance because of the places that don't get good broadband. I mean, that obviously if you're living in a rural place, someplace that's not wired up, you're better off with a big DVR and potentially a satellite dish. But everywhere else,
although if satellites become just more of a distribution network, you might see like a Google or an Apple actually buying up, dish network, or buying up, one of the distributors like that, just for the satellite base.
AT&T is trying to buy DirecTV. That purchase is in process. And notice Comcast is trying to buy Time Warner. I don't know where that one is either.
As long as I can get to the main channels I want to get to, I don't have an issue. That's mainly like Tech Bytes and HWOG and Pound Wireless. I'm good. Actually, I've got a free subscription to infinite number of channels. Like, you can flip channels all day.
True that. Call the internet. You haven't run out of internet IRC. Yet.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a few quick try-by-or fries. Do we want to do that before the break?
Sure.
Is there a Barrett time tonight?
No, there was a unicorn party instead of a Barrett time. Apologies.
Okay, well, I've got a few quick try-by-or fries.
That's the best excuse.
I haven't seen anything products come out of South by Southwest. But this is one thing that's at South by Southwest that I just wondered what people think of. Taco Bell built a Taco Bell stand out of shipping containers in 3 days. It took them 3 days to build it, and they're going to use it to serve Taco Bell to South by Southwest attendees during this week. It's made out of three shipping containers. Basically, they have two small ones, and then two short containers, and then a long container that is on top of the other two. And I guess the kitchen or something is up in the top part, and then they move the food through. It's all outdoor eating. So if you saw a shipping container Taco Bell, would you try it?
Not in Austin. I mean, it's a really cool concept, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you're in, you know, Tex-Mex, all kinds of, you know, awesome food. I think, you know, people can kind of see through Taco Bell. Unless you go through Taco Bell as a distinct family of pseudo-Mexican food, which, you know, I might...
It's its own category.
It's its own category.
maybe the smart move here would be to get your own shipping container and set it up with pay toilets right next to the Taco Bell, because it's all outdoors. They don't have any facilities. Okay, next one is, Tidy and I told this, in the earlier news, was talking about the shrinking PC market. There's a new device that I don't think we've talked about yet on the show, but the HP Stream Mini, which by its name, and if you looked at it, you might think it was a TV like a set-top box, but it actually is a PC. It's about $180. It's sort of puck-shaped and sized, weighs about 3 pounds. It has a couple of ports on it, two USB 3.0 ports on the front, another two on the rear, an HDMI, DisplayPort, audio, and Ethernet jacks on the back. But for $180, essentially, Gizmodo reviewed it, and for a lot of normal people's use, basically they said it's kind of equivalent to back in the 90s when you would buy a Gateway or an eMachines PC, because that was the least expensive way you could get into a PC. And these use a Haswell chip, which is like in a lot of people are already using for laptops. It comes with 2 gigs of RAM, and apparently you can expand it to 6. And they said, if you did buy the machine and wanted to do very much, you would want to go up to 6 gigs. And finally, it's got, I think it's like a 24 gig SSD in it, so you got to use the cloud with it. Is that a try, buy, or fry for people?
It doesn't really appeal to me so much.
They suggest, one of the things they say under their likes is that full Windows 8.1 box, cheap enough that you can't build your own for less, is compelling for some people. They suggested if you wanted to put together a lightweight MAME box to build a custom arcade cabinet, it would cost you more than the Stream Mini. So there are some. It could be interesting. I mean, in a sense, it's like a Windows 8.1 Arduino or a Raspberry Pi.
It looks like the Apple Mini when they first launched those back 5-6 years ago.
If it was a situation where you could load up an aggregator for all your streaming content and you could just click on a web page and get the show you wanted.
Yeah, except the hard drive is tiny.
Right. I guess you could hook it up to a NAS drive.
Yeah, true. USB, or it's got USB 3.0. I'm sure you could put an external on it.
Yeah. Okay, I'm vacillating.
So maybe moving towards try.
Maybe moving towards try. Okay, well, that music tells us that it's time to take our station break. So we're going to take a short break here, come back, and not have a Barrett time because of unicorns, and carry on with the show. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
KPFT's Jazz Festival Weekend Getaway Raffle, where the prize is a pair of weekend passes to the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival and a 3-day condo stay on the weekend of May 1st to the 3rd. Proceeds of this raffle benefits KPFT. At the festival, you'll be able to see Lenny Kravitz, Elton John, Aaron Neville, and a host of other musical acts. Tickets are $5 for one and $20 for five. Get your tickets at KPFT, 419 Lovett Boulevard, from 10 to 6 p.m. every weekday, or call 713-526-4000 and ask for Tony. The drawing will be on April 15th, 2015. You're listening to KPFT, Houston.
Got KPFT transmite por el aire 24 horas del día, 7 días de la semana y cubre diferentes tipos de gente y gente con diferentes estilos de vida. KPFT está aquí cuando usted necesita lo mejor de noticias independientes y música durante el día. Pero manteniendo este tipo de recurso no viene barato. KPFT necesita su contribución para continuar a tener esta estación única cuando usted lo necesite. Si usted está escuchando cuando se prepara por la cama o cuando se está levantando en la mañana para el trabajo, ¿por qué no hablar a la línea de departamentos de miembros a KPFT y hacer un miembro? El número es fácil. Para recordar, es 713-526-4000, extensión 314. O puede visitarnos en nuestra página kpft.org y dar su contribución. Esto es KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, and now for something completely the same.
Well, we were in the middle of Try, Buy, or Fry.
All right, welcome back to Technology Bites, and we are doing the Try, Buy, or Fry because Barrett in unicorns.
And I added another thing to Try, Buy, or Fry over the break since we don't have a Barrett time. This isn't the one I added, though. You'll know when I get to the next one. This one, you know, there's Bluetooth, like, deals to keep track of your stuff with smartphones, but one of the problems I've seen is where they don't have, where they're not cross-platform. You know, they're usually tied to Android specifically or iOS specifically. This one is called Tile Tracking Tags. Basically, it's about $25 for a tile. You can put it on a bag or in a wallet or on a keychain. And then if you, if you're trying to find it, you open the free app on your smartphone, and you can see all the items you've attached Tile to on a map and make them beep so that you can find them quickly. And the other thing that apparently is interesting with it is, I guess, other people with the same app, if they're nearby, the tiles are reporting their location through all the different users that are around. So if you didn't happen to be near your keys but somebody else did with the app, it would find it. I don't lose stuff that often, so I don't know. I have been watching these, though, because it's like when you do misplace something like a wallet or keys or a bag, it's extra frustrating. It's one of those where I wonder if it's where I'm thinking it might be worth $25 to make sure that I can't, that I don't have that something go missing on me.
Well, I'd like to have something like this that reported the location, even if I wasn't within range of my phone.
Yeah.
That would be, I could use it just to kind of kill off some frustration with losing my keys in the house. Just, you know,
I don't think these actually beep. I think the application on your phone beeps as you get closer. And they also say 100
phone, or doesn't the app, I thought the application makes the tiles beep.
I don't think it's got an active component in there. I think it's a passive RFID, but I could be wrong.
Oh, maybe. Although, see, the thing is, if you're with the item and you're the one that's, you know, basically you're the one that lost it, presumably if your phone is keeping track if on a regular basis with it, when you, say, drop your keys on the street and you walk and you're out of range of it, presumably the map has been updated and it knows the last place that it knew where the keys were.
Well, they also have those devices like that are used for children that wander off, that if something gets out of range, it starts beeping. You start getting an alert that your thing, your child, or your camera bag has gotten away.
Use a leash. Just get a leash. It's what all good parenting is really based on. It's just, you know, tie your kids down.
Dog collar.
Tie your children down. Dog collar. Tie your children down.
So they say they get 100 feet, but I'm not too sure how they get 100 feet out of RFID. Well, I guess it's Bluetooth.
The reality, I mean, it seems like GPS technology needs to advance to the next level. I mean, for example, me and my analog wife were out walking a couple of weeks ago, and this this nice-looking dog comes running by, and we knew that it was somebody's dog, and he was very friendly, and he came up, you know, we were able to call him over. And
did you ask him if he wanted a Scooby snack?
says, so he had a tag on with the phone number, which was great. But so I pulled out my cell phone. I called the phone number and got a hold of the guy who owned the dog. And he said, yeah, I'm just driving down the street. I'll be there in just a minute. And he pulls right up, like without us really even telling him where we were. And it turns out the dog has a little GPS tracking thing on his collar that he charges up, and he has an app on his phone that shows him where the dog is.
It's a regular thing for this guy.
The dog apparently jumps over the fence frequently, and so he had to get this device for it. So that idea that, I mean, this thing, and you could see it on the collar, but it wasn't meaty. It wasn't terribly heavy.
They make small things. The issue right now is even in the hobbyist market, those chips, you know, like the GPS chip costs, I've seen them about as low as $20, and that's like bargain basement prices.
Well, then you have to subscribe to a service, so the thing has to be trackable by GPS, and you have to have a unique identifier on it. So you have to subscribe.
Well, then, yeah, you've got to communicate somehow that position. So you have a cell tower, if you want to be completely ubiquitous, and yeah, that's another charge. And then you've got to power all those things with a battery. Although, I guess you could put a little solar panel on your dog's back. There may be ways around that, but
well, they're not to the implanting part yet.
You just put like kinetic things on its legs.
Oh yeah, on his tail. Yeah, as long as he's happy, he's totally trackable.
Well, my thing is that I would just like to be able to put something that, you know, just drop something like that. I mean, I know they have it, like they have the LoJack service and stuff, but I would like to just be able to drop something in my car. I've thought about, you know, like even like if I had an old iPhone, if I could wire that in and keep the cellular service on there and have it wired into the car battery.
So you don't need to track your car right now. You know exactly where it is.
No, but if it got stolen, it'd be nice that if I could, you know, find my iCar.
I meant your other car.
Oh, the other car. I know where it is. It's not going anywhere right away. Gee, thanks.
You're having such a happy show up
That's
until
just
now.
How many fingers am I holding up? So... No, but I just think it'd be nice to just have this kind of tag like we're looking at here. And so to give you a frame of reference, we're talking about on the, if you go to the Geek Radio site, we have a link to it, but it's the, it's called the tile. It's a tile tracking tag, and it's a very neat idea. And I don't know if I'm ready to spend $25 to save myself 10 minutes of panicked car key searching. Because, you know, I guess it would be nice to know that they, at least I could figure out that it must have gotten into the house, that I have the keys are in the house somewhere, because I had to have unlocked the door to get into the house. So I know the keys are here.
How did I get here? Okay.
There's only so many places.
I'm obviously inside.
Why is there a puddle in the middle of the floor?
But it's
no broken glass. This is a good sign.
But if you're out and you allow yourself to be driven somewhere by friends... And, you know, you come back to your car and you don't have your keys. It'd be nice to go, which bar did I drop my keys in? So it'd be nice to have something like this that, I don't know, I guess there's just no way to get the battery life. Like if it'd be battery charged, you'd have to plug it in every night to charge it. That would suck.
I would get one of these in case I lost my phone. Oh, wait.
But I guess if it did like an update, like, you know, the last time it knew where the keys were, you had mentioned that, Barrett.
Yeah. Like I think Pete did that, so it tracks, and that's the thing. It tracks that. And I didn't see this anywhere on the site, but I like the idea, and I'm scared of the idea that other users' phones that have Tile, as they pass by and that Bluetooth connection picks up that your
Tile
idea is there, it must communicate it up to a server and then communicate back down to your phone. But if you could break that, I mean, this is just purely from the funsies kind of perspective. You break the protocol and you could send someone all over the world looking for their keys. Instead of hiding their keys, you could digitally hide their keys, you know.
It'd be tough to, it seems like on that front, you know, of course you say it and then some hacker's going to figure out how to do it.
Well, if it's RFID, it's not RFID. It's got to be Bluetooth for that kind of range. But you could fake Bluetooth. I mean, they've got a thing called Ubertooth One that for under $100, you can actually sniff Bluetooth traffic and replay Bluetooth traffic. So,
Yeah, I guess the thing, I mean, you'd really have to be very specific, though. It's not like where you could just generally figure out what somebody's Tile was and then fake the
No, but if I got near like Jay Lee and he had it on his keyring and I'm just sitting here casually, I could, you know, probably figure out what that is, you know, just by sniffing the network or, you know, pinging it or sending some traffic that way. Then I've got his, you know, unique ID and then, you know, go from there. I'm not, it's worth a lot of trouble for a small practical joke, but that does exist.
One of the things with it that I would say, I don't know, maybe speaks against it is apparently, you know, because looking for how is this powered, I went and looked at their site, and what they do is they run for a year with zero upkeep, no batteries, no charging, no anything. After a year, they can help you recycle your old tiles and replace them with the latest model. Of course, they don't say that you just, like, give them your old tile and get a new one. I have a feeling there would be a small fee involved to you know, to continue to do it. So rather than changing the batteries in whatever it is, you have to, you know, get a new one.
So there is an active component to it. There's a, it's got a power source.
It does say you can make it beep. So there must be a battery in there or something.
Where? I'm curious now.
It's when I let's see.
It says it made it sound like the app beeped when you got near it.
No, it says just open up the free app on your smartphone and see all of the items you've attached tile to on a map and make them beep.
Well, okay.
So they're back in your hands quickly.
Then on their website, they have a section. You know, it's a single page site, so it's harder to get to get you to a particular place. But they have a section called "Peace of Mind Never Looked So Good," and they mention that that basically that it's got that they guarantee it runs for a year with zero upkeep, no batteries, no charging. After a year, they can help you recycle it and replace them with the latest model. On the plus side, I mean, that means they can keep advancing it and they don't have to keep supporting the old stuff. So that may make sense.
Well, it looks like it's not very big. It's, you know, like those things that you get from the grocery store for.
It's like a quarter of the size. Yeah, if you took like the slimline one and cut that in half, it's that size square. And maybe, you know, a little bit thicker than a thick credit card.
I wonder how it holds up in your pocket and to be in.
Probably. I mean, if this is just pure plastic and they, you know, coated it. You know, just a pure plastic chip, probably pretty rugged. And I bet you that's why they made it to where you can't swap out the batteries, to where you could wash this, you could put it in the dryer, it could probably take a beating. The thing I saw
is
it's water resistant, at least.
It says, as the Bluetooth signal draws you closer, tile's distinctive melody will play until your lost item is back in safe hands. So does it beep, or does it have its own melody, or is the melody coming from the phone and the tile's
beeping? I don't
know.
You're reading what I'm reading.
Well, maybe we.
I would try just to solve the
mystery.
Get
one, and then figure.
But still, the price point's not that great.
No.
And again, I don't think I like the price point because, you know, it really, at least in the way I'm reading this, is it's like useful for reducing the amount of stress that you would expend about 10 to 15 minutes frantically trying to remember where you left your keys in the house. Now, if it was something where I thought I was going to lose my keys, now, you know. Maybe they need to make a version for your wedding ring or something. So,
I think if this is what they're starting at, though, at some point, if they ever get where it's $5 or $10, then I think that'd be a really strong.
Yeah, where it gets to the point where it's like, you know, the same price as like a luggage name tag, you know, for traveling. That would actually be not a bad thing. I wouldn't mind having a system like this traveling. You know, if a bag walks off or if anything, you know, like, and they make bag alarms like that are big and bulky and have batteries. So this is kind of a cheap. New version of this or of that.
I don't know if any of you watched the show, like the show Overhaulin'. Basically, it's they find deserving people who've got like old cars that they haven't been able to fix up that really wanted to, and then they quote steal the car with the help from an insider and take it and redo it in a week and then give it back. And the original shows, they'd steal them, and then they would harass the person, like call up pretending to be the insurance guy and accuse them of stealing their own car, stuff like that, just for fun. But once people have these kinds of devices where, you know, because they like their car, like Jay mentioned, you know, you'd really like something where you could keep track of where your car was, then shows like that where they're going to, you know, play that game would not work anymore because the guy would show up. 15 minutes after the first time you told him the car was gone, he'd show up probably with the cops to retrieve his stuff, and you lose your surprise. But shows you the value of it, though. I mean, it seems like somebody's going. This is one of those things where it's out there and it's a product that's available, and I think it's one of those things that eventually is going to become fairly pervasive. That there's going to be something for most people that they'll have a need where they're going to want something like it. Oh, the final try buy or fry. There's a new movie coming out, and that is a live-action movie about an alien-controlled cadre of classic video game characters wreaking havoc upon humanity by turning everything they touch into pixels. The name of the movie is Pixels. And it stars Adam Sandler and Kevin James, so Happy Gilmore and Paul Blart Mall Cop. I have a feeling this one, you know, I'll give my thought on it, is I think it's Fry, because I think it's
I think going it's by.
Really?
Yeah, I think the retro thing is going to be really cool.
I think it's Stream.
Stream. Try by or Stream.
I think it's
do
I think
for
it's
free. Because video game type videos based on movies based on video games have not done particularly well. So the article I saw on Engadget said Pixels looks more along the lines of 2005's Doom, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, or any number of Uwe Boll's crummy adaptations.
It does have Peter Dinklage in it.
Right.
That's true, with a mullet.
Kevin James plays the president. Adam Sandler. We'll see.
There's at the link, if you look, there's a GIF of Pac-Man eating a fire truck in real life.
I already watched the trailer earlier.
The trailer's pretty good.
I already watched the trailer earlier today, but yeah, it's a Fry for me just because I hate Adam Sandler.
He's not doing a funny voice in this one, though.
Yeah, that helps. The only thing I ever really liked him in was Punch Drunk Love, and that's because he didn't act like himself.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of Adam Sandler, but the trailer kind of looks slightly interesting.
The trailer looks really cool.
I heard Wreck-It Ralph was good.
Wreck-It Ralph was good.
I've actually still never watched that.
Wreck-It Ralph was good. And the
at the end
good.
Of the article, they say, should you need a solid video game-related movie to watch this summer, they suggest Wreck-It Ralph, which I would endorse, or Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Oh, that was good. Yeah, that was a good – that's based on a comic book.
I'm trying to remember if I watched that one or not.
Oh, man. If you haven't, it's pretty cheap on Blu-ray DVD to even just buy.
It's a good adaptation of a comic book by somebody who obviously – understands comic book culture and video games and did a good job of converting that to the screen.
That's I'm gonna forget his name, but it's the
Scott
guy
Pilgrim?
Who worked with Simon Pegg for Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. I'll have to look it up.
Actually, that guy has something new coming out here pretty soon. The Shaun of the Dead guy.
Oh, is it Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg? Those two?
Yeah. Edgar Wright did
Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah,
that was a good movie. I'd never read any of the Scott Pilgrim comic books, so I didn't really have any. So I can't say like it was accurate representation of the comic books or not, but it was good.
Yeah, I read some of them after seeing it, and it really did seem to capture the spirit of it. Obviously the comic strip was like black and white, so it wasn't even like colored in type stuff. So there was a lot of room to sort of figure out what to fill in the blanks. But, that one was excellent. So I'm thinking Pixels. I don't know. I think, that one is probably on my Fry list. I guess if all kinds of people go and say it's wonderful and amazing and great and you should see it, then
I guess Try By or Fry really depends on the resurrection of Pirate Bay.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Hey, speaking of, I just found this. I don't know if Pete mentioned this earlier, but TheVerge.com actually has, and this is totally backpedaling, they've got, it's called the Cord Cutter, and it is a calculator that more or less it will calculate what it costs to get all of your TV online. So you can actually go through, it tells you what services you've got. It'll show you what channels you have. You can say what shows you want to do, and it's pretty cool. How did I get there? If you search for like online TV stream price guide, it gets you there. But it's kind of neat because I think it goes out, it knows all the prices of all the different services in your area, and it will give you what it is on cable, and it'll give you what it is off cable.
Did you follow the link from IRC?
Is that how did I get there? I have no idea how I got there. Suddenly, I just looked down and I'm like, oh, this is a cool thing.
Because I think that I didn't follow the link, but PC Guy posted a link.
I didn't follow that from IRC, but we arrived at the same way. because I've not been to.
I had seen it. I should have copied and stuck the link on the page because, but a calculator doesn't work well as a news story. You know, yeah, it's a calculator, and you know, obviously, in addition to the conversation, it makes sense, but it didn't up front. It didn't look like it'd be a good choice, but.
Oh, I got there looking at Pixels movie information. There was a link to it.
Ah, because I guess The Verge has, I think, is where that is one of the places it has the trailer.
Yeah, and also I was also reading a Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg. That's how I got there. Yeah, the Reunited It Feels So Good. There was an article on there, and then The Verge thing linked me over to the other. Ah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's horrible. It's like, you know, like when you're driving to work and you zone out for 2 or 3 minutes. You're like, how did I get here? They had the exact same experience on the net. I think if I lived in South Korea, that would be bad. That would be addicting. Have you guys seen the, there's a movie, the couple of documentaries that came out. I want to say it's by a Japanese documentarian. And one of them is Life in Internet Cafes. So I think it's like a 30-minute short or so, and there are a lot of people that, you know, come into the city and they get tech kind of jobs, and they can't necessarily afford to go get housing, and they don't want to, like, you know, live with their parents in the rural stuff, so they confine themselves to these small cubes that they get by the hour, and they cook ramen, they sleep in there, they do everything in there. And, you know, apparently it's such a big thing, they're, you know, on the map to the point where there's a movie about it. So that's kind of
it seems
neat.
Like that would lead to a high depression and suicide rate.
Yeah, they say it. Yeah, Japanese already, it's not a happy culture. And then, you know, you look at these guys and it's, you know, they're smoking, working online, they sleep just very, very little. But it's that's true cord cutting. I mean, they're cutting, you know, even the cord to the home. They're pure online pretty much.
I read an article, news article a few months ago that was talking about Japan and their economy and their culture and the fact that there's a lot of young people that are basically becoming disinterested with life, and they're kind of choosing like something to be focused on, but it's not family or work or whatever, and they're like not interested in dating or procreating.
They're actually
or
there's
any
a
of that.
Dip in the yeah they're gonna so have
actually,
an issue.
They said that like they just recently passed in Japan. They recently passed the point where there were more adult diapers sold than baby diapers.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez, yeah, their population is shrinking, so they're aging, and the average age is going up, and the population
it's
is
a little
going
upside
down.
I think that's why they're banking so heavily on robots to be able to assist. No, I mean really to be able to, you know, assist the elderly, because they're not going to have, you know, the force of young workers to be able to do that. The movie I was talking about, it's called Net Cafe Refugees, and it's just a short documentary that plunges the viewer into the world of 24-hour internet-connected cubicles that serve as makeshift living spaces for many of Japanese living on the edge of society. It's a little bit depressing, kind of cool, mostly depressing. But
like it's sort of the Japanese – in America, it's the equivalent of living in your car.
Pretty much, yeah.
Except it's more like living in a square watermelon.
Except you don't go anywhere, yeah.
Because it's like, yeah, living in a rental car. So you don't even own it, and it's not really private, and you can't, you know, lock the doors kind of thing.
So I did that's really scary on the rents, though, in Japan, because I don't know how much the internet cafes go for, but, I mean, they are paying by the hour, and I'd be curious to see.
It's in Japan, at least was Tokyo specifically, was really, really expensive. It used to be the most expensive city in the world. It may have gone back to that, but I know a few years ago Moscow bypassed it, but for years Tokyo, I think, was the most expensive city in the world.
Yeah, to buy an apartment there, it's like 100-year mortgages.
I would guess at some point, if the population declines, I mean, the real estate market would, I would assume, would collapse as well.
I wonder if cities would, because I think rural. A friend of mine had been over there some years ago, and the thing that he said that was odd is, you know, you hear about Japan is so crowded and all that, but you would go, you know, when you're going on the train from one part of Japan to another, they would pass these rural towns that were essentially abandoned. There was nobody living there.
Yeah, that's
so just empty.
If you want to jump on the happy train after watching the Cube Livers, and what Pete's talking about, the guy did two other films and released them all around the same time. One of the other two films is called Overwork to Suicide. So it's about overworked white collar workers. And the other one is Dumping Ground. It's about the homeless elderly. So fun Wednesday night.
So where's that?
Wow, that guy sounds like somebody link... you'd want to spend an evening with.
Yeah. I put a link in IRC just because I do think I watched the Cube one, and it's pretty good. But we'll get that up on the site.
Is it on YouTube or Netflix?
I believe
or...
it's on YouTube. Yeah, you can. It's a few different places. He's putting it out there for free. Okay. So it's not, you don't have to sign into a service to go
have
watch
any, it. Have any of y'all watched Citizen 4 yet? The Snowden documentary?
No, I'm excited about that.
I really want to watch that. I haven't watched it yet. I did watch one that was done in Sweden. It was a Scandinavian country. I'm pretty sure. I think it was Sweden, Denmark. I don't remember. Anyway, it was a documentary that was, I guess, probably done for their television. That kind of covers a gap that Citizen 4 doesn't cover. That kind of covers from the time he talked to the Guardian. The Guardian UK reporters, and when he got to Moscow, like it covers that time period. It's in another language, but there weren't any subtitles.
Sure, someone will subtitle it eventually. Yeah.
But the thing is, a lot of it was interviews, and so a lot of it was in English because it was all Americans that were being interviewed. So it was just when they were kind of doing the documentary, like talkovers and narrator voice stuff that was in another language that you didn't really know. But that was probably 10 to 15% of the film, and the rest of it was like American newspapers and interviews, and it was actually really interesting.
Yeah, the clips I'd seen, it was just him talking, but I just assumed it was in English, not knowing.
That's Citizen 4.
Okay.
I'm talking about
okay.
a different one.
Ah, okay.
That's I watched on, I think, on YouTube. I don't remember what it was called, it was good. It was 48 minutes long or something.
All right, so we're having fun talking about movies here, but we have done the Try Buyer Fry, so we still have the Weird Science thing, and Pete actually
a new bumper for that. I'm still trying to figure out what to do for Try Buyer Fry as an intro, little short, music sting or something for that, but not yet.
Can you cue up the Weird Science thing, or do you have that ability? Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw it. I wasn't sure if it was. Play ready or not. Like, he put it there, but I wasn't sure if it was just to like listen to
I figured give it a shot. If it sucks, then it's funny, and if it's okay, awesome, then it's a start.
So yeah, we're trying to come up with bumpers for the different segments that we're trying to introduce into this format of Technology Bites, and so we have the Weird Science portion of the show, and Pete has conceptualized an intro bump for it, and now has executed at least a Try Buyer Fry version of it.
I'm not sure if this is going to play over my computer speakers
or
over the air.
It should, since the audio from your computer is going out.
But I don't. I may only have audio specifically for Hangouts and Skype going through.
Well, you want to try?
I'll try it.
Try Buyer Fry. Your
give it a shot.
Obviously, it's not going out over there.
Okay, I'm thinking that's not. Yeah, that doesn't seem to be happening.
Yeah, we'll have it next week.
I'll change it.
I can play it over a speaker.
I've got to go into my settings.
That's all right. Flickit will figure it out. He always does.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing and the tough thing on the remotes is. I've thought about it. I may try. I wouldn't mind getting like a small soundboard so that I could have another source of audio,
right,
and then basically have a laptop with sound files or whatever on it that then you could play through. Because otherwise, if I played it on mine, I'd hear it and you guys wouldn't. I don't know how, they don't really tell you how to make it where it would route through.
I believe it'll play this time.
Okay,
go for it.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious
science. I think it's getting there.
Yeah, I guess the background music is louder when it played out than it is when I listen to it in headphones. But it's a start. I'll work on it. I think the Weird Science part on the end, I'm gonna dump. I don't think that. I think it's too jarring. But
okay.
Yeah, just bring all the four-letter words back. I think that's the way to go.
No, I'm going to leave the sign. I thought that part worked, but and the speech was pretty good. It's just by itself, you can just like hear the car running in the background from the movie, and so some music behind it, but it's just a little bit too loud, so it covers up his voice. That's tough. That's the weirdest thing to me, is because on the headphones, listening to it directly, it sounds like a pretty good balance, but it clearly the background needs to be softer.
You probably have some really high-dollar headphones like Beats by Dre, though, or something.
So, well, anyways, on the Weird Science, I got a few things, and you can follow along again at geekradio.com. On the front page, we have the links. If you're needing a trendy new diet, you know, paleo is just – you've figured out that maybe there are some issues with paleo. There are plenty of other periods in history to arbitrarily base your eating regime around. And The Guardian has a very nice selection. The Primordio diet, they say, why stop at the Paleolithic era? Maybe the standard of health was better back then than it is now. But using that logic, then farther back you go, the better your health should be. And since all life originates from the primordial era when the universe was born, then that's the point where things were the most pure. Before being sullied and polluted by the creeping influence of entropy and calories.
But wouldn't you have
the
to
Primordio
do it
diet, you cut out all processed foods, meat, plant material, and basically anything that has in any way been derived from a living organism at some point, or from rocks, or has molecules in it. Your main meal on the Primordio diet is a rich concoction of plasma, gluons, radiation, and residual energy from the Big Bang. So that could be worthwhile. You can also indulge in some simple gases. There's that. But moving forward, there's the Ordovician diet. That's when all life was in the sea and basically it was like sort of giant kind of mollusks and insects. But for that one, you cut out all foods based on complex cells and land-based life and subsist on plankton, sipped from the water using your fronds or dedicated filters.
Eat a lot of amoeba.
What?
If you're a meat eater, there's the Jurassic diet. That's a good one. Let's see.
That's
the
Flintstones diet, right? That's where you get the giant brontosaurus burger?
On the Jurassic diet, you're allowed to eat any natural foods you like. You like leaves. Eat as many leaves as you want. But you have to rip them from the teeth from the trees with your powerful teeth and extremely long neck. You can also have meat as long as it's some form of primitive rodent-like mammal, but you have to hunt it and kill it yourself, tearing out its innards with your sharp, long teeth. Remember, with the Jurassic one, you want to avoid all gluten and asteroids.
Right.
I like the Jurassic Park diet. I like fast food that comes with some sort of branding for the new movie.
Fast food that runs fast, too. You get your exercise and your diet. And then that one was fun. This one's not so fun. You could file this under, well, this is worse than we thought. There's a study published in Nature Geoscience finds that warm seawater is likely getting under an East Antarctic glacier and melting it from below. And the problem with that is if this particular glacier's ice shelf melts, that runaway melting would cause 11 feet of sea level rise.
I thought you were going to say that it was going to make a really good sci-fi movie about a giant glacier that's hurtling across the ocean at like 2 kilometers a day.
It had frozen sharks in it. It would be Shark Glacier Flood.
Shark Glacier.
Sea level rise. Coming to the Sci-Fi Channel. No, unfortunately, the problem is that the West Antarctic ice sheet is a low-lying region especially prone to runaway melting. Last year, two major studies concluded that it had started a slow-motion collapse and that there's nothing that we can do about it. The new study of the Totten Glacier in East Antarctica adds more bad news. This is on top of the one with the possible 10-foot rise. And the thing is that they studied it closely. And they're seeing where warm water could get underneath it and accelerate the melting. And the thing is that this could happen a lot quicker than we thought. And, you know, there've been a lot of arguing about stuff when they were talking about, you know, 3 feet of sea level rise. And this is just, this is not even close, unfortunately. So not fun, but it is worth noting these things as they happen, so that when some moron with a snowball walks into the Congress, that you can laugh at him for the fool he is, rather than think that the science maybe is wrong because he went out and found a snowball. Better news, at least we'll have cool technology. Columbia Engineering has invented a technology that was thought to be impossible. Basically, like for your Wi-Fi, we were talking about it a few weeks ago about like extending somebody's network. And one of the problems when you use an extender is that you cut your bandwidth in half because you can only transmit or receive on the same frequency. Apparently, a team of Columbia engineering researchers has invented a technology that's called full duplex radio integrated circuits that can be implemented in nanoscale CMOS to enable simultaneous transmission and reception on the same frequency in a wireless radio. They presented their work at the International Solid State Circuits Conference in San Francisco on February 25th. In the era of big data, the current frequency spectrum crisis is one of the biggest challenges researchers are grappling with, and it is clear that today's wireless networks will not be able to support tomorrow's volumes of data. Today's standards such as 4G LTE already support 40 different frequency bands, and there's no space left at radio frequencies for future expansion. At the same time, the grand challenge of the next generation 5G network is to increase the data capacity by 1,000 times. And so when a transmitter and receiver can reuse the same frequency, it has the potential to immediately double the data capacity of today's networks. So there are startups and other research groups that are working on it. There are some that have demonstrated it, but no one had yet been able to build a tiny nanoscale IC with this capability.
So when you said nano CMOS, you didn't mean very small moss that lives in the sea.
I thought we were talking diets again.
We're off the Ordovician diet now, and onto technology, onto radio technology. And then finally, this one, if there had been a Barrett time, I bet he would have mentioned it because it's an interesting anniversary. 50 years ago was the first spacewalk. It's more than 50 years since humans first went into space, Sputnik's first orbit or Yuri Gagarin. But this is the first time a crew member stepped out from their spacecraft's protection
and almost died
and we're out in the cold, hostile emptiness of the vacuum. On March 18th, 1965, 30-year-old Russian cosmonaut Alexei Leonov completed a 12-minute spacewalk. For you kids who have had like crummy history classes, the Russians were way ahead of us for most of the first 10 years of the space race. They had a satellite up before us. They had men in space. They did everything before us. They didn't get to the moon, and that's when it kind of turned. But unfortunately, the U.S. space program was a whole cavalcade of fail up until they really got it together.
The Russians also killed a lot of people before us.
The Russians obviously got to go faster when they didn't care if their people were going to survive.
And they also
because
got
what they
some,
would do
some
is succeed at
German
the mission and then tell people
engineers.
It happened.
Yeah, just borrow some rocket scientists from some other country that you take after the war.
The thing on that spacewalk, basically astronaut flight suits haven't changed a lot, but when you're the first guy, you don't know what's going to happen. And apparently, as he went out of the Voskhod 2 space capsule, Leonov's suit expanded as the pressure around him changed. After 10 minutes in space, his suit was blown up like a balloon. And if he didn't act, the suit would blow itself apart, and if he wanted to go back into the ship, it wouldn't fit through the airlock. They'd vent the air inside the suit into space, and as the effects of decompression sickness and the heat from the exertion began to take their toll, he pulled himself back onto the craft. There was nobody else there. I mean, it was just him by himself. So that almost didn't go so – they almost didn't announce that one, I'm thinking.
I was just saying, that's the one that we know about.
Yeah, that's the thing. They've had a habit of I guess especially when there was the big space race was on, if it wasn't a success, they didn't publicize it. So I know a lot of documents, I'm kind of speaking without actually having the source in front of me, but I know that, you know, they would have had one of the first female astronauts up in space, or cosmonauts rather, but that didn't go well. I think the entire crew didn't make it, and just a lot of things like that. So they had, you know, in the effort to get people up there first, they had a lot of missteps.
The Russian space program, there's a lot associated with the Italians who the Italian brothers who said they recorded a lot of the tower to ship information on and it's not clear, some of it it's not clear if it's fake or not, but a lot of it apparently checks out. And one of them was one astronaut who basically didn't make it, who the whole tape is him cussing them out up one side and down the other as his ship, you know, basically came in.
That was a friend of Gagarin's. And
yeah, who went because if he didn't go, they were going to make Gagarin go.
And Gagarin, I think the story was Gagarin tried to talk them into not going at all, like not seeing anybody because it wasn't safe. But they were, the government was dead set that they were going to send somebody. And so this guy ended up going, and supposedly, his capsule melted around him on the way in reentry, and it basically burned into the ground, and some of his bones and the metal were all kind of one piece that is just solidified like metal mass.
Zoinks! Yeah, they explore. Yeah, and yet today, the Soviet technology run by the current day Russians is what gets us to the space station and back.
Grigory Nelyubov, I think, was the name of the person that went up. I mean, had the issue, the one that
I remember reading that article, but I don't remember the name.
So, I'm reading an article. So apparently the Russians didn't acknowledge that forever. And then a photo actually came out that had a picture of the first one with some press releases. And it was like, hold on, how are there two? And then, you know, just kind of spilled from there.
Well, or the other thing was the way that it was kept track of, you know, by like the CIA and that people who were trying to see what was going on is they would – a photo would be out that showed, like, you know, the astronaut team, you know, the various potential astronauts or whatever, and then the photo would be released again, like in the newspaper, and then whoever was not in it anymore, they would airbrush them out or replace them with somebody else. Is part of kind of how they kept track of what was going on.
The I want to say the Italian guys. The interesting story with them was that the Americans were also trying to like spy and listen on the space program that when the Russians were in space or whatever to see what they were doing, and they were having problems figuring it out. And these Italian guys did it, and they were like, how did y'all figure this out? And they were like, oh, well, we just looked at the pictures that the Russians were sending out, and they had the antennas on the equipment, and they had people so we could get a scale of how tall the person was and compare it to the antenna and get the frequency.
So they paid attention is the short. there's some of the stuff that it's not clear if it was, you know, if it was what they thought it was, but some of it, it's really compelling. I guess I'll say that, you know, reading some of the stories on the Italian guys, there's one where they thought it was the life support signals of an astronaut, and you basically sort of, you hear their end, and it's like with thinking that's what it means, it's pretty creepy. Of course, our thing, you know, we have the missing Apollo 11 tapes. I don't think they've been found, you know, on our information.
Didn't they find some recordings a few years ago that were in a in Australia?
Yeah, where they found some stills.
No, I thought it was video. I thought this was video, and it was like it was stuff that they aired over the television. But of course, television quality broadcast was much lower quality than what they were actually getting back directly.
Well, apparently there was like raw SSTV transmissions that to ground station monitors.
Yeah, and it was an Australian
SSTV format tapes, they if those were found, then they could use more modern technology to make an even higher quality conversion. But apparently, let's see, the researchers that were looking for them discovered that the tapes containing the raw, unprocessed Apollo 11 SSTV signal were erased and reused by NASA in the early 1980s. Mm. Although researchers never found the telemetry tapes they were looking for, they did discover the best visual quality NTSC videotapes, as well as Super 8 movie film taken with a video monitor in Australia, showing the SSTV transmission before it was converted. In 2009, NASA were processed as part of a NASA-approved restoration project of the first moonwalk. So there's that. And they partially released newly enhanced footage from the search. But
and they made that into a movie. It was like Apollo 18, I think.
And it's sad that basically because NASA didn't have the money for more tapes, that in the 1980s they erased the original stuff and reused the tapes. That one is where you wish they'd invent time travel so we could go back and slap whoever thought that was a good idea.
Yeah, don't worry about Hitler. Let's go find those tapes.
We're geeks. It's important stuff. If without Hitler, you might not have had you wouldn't have had Wernher von Braun, and maybe the rocketry would not have progressed like it did.
I would go look on the dark side of the moon first. That's where I would start the search for those tapes.
Well, they're Nazi at the Nazi base. They have really good footage.
All right. So, what? Any other space news?
That's all the science news has
got.
We've
got an eclipse coming up in a couple of weeks, I believe. I believe it's a week from this Friday. It's not going to be. It's like a 95% from here. It's not full from the U.S., but it's pretty close.
Is there some comet or something?
Shh.
Either that just went by or is about to go by or something. Maybe meteor showers. Is something going on? No?
I haven't seen anything on that in a while. At least we're telling you about the potential eclipse ahead of it as opposed to what we did with Pi Day last week, not really mentioning it.
Yeah, and the big thing on Pi Day was it was the, 3.1415.
Once every 100 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, actually, when I went to House of Pies on Saturday, was it Saturday? Sunday.
You
it was
Pi
Day,
yeah,
Pi
the
Day
60,
was the 14th, yeah. So on Sunday, I was talking to them, and they were saying, oh, it was insane. They were like, people started at like 7:30, people started showing up, and it was like nonstop. Nobody went home early. Everybody worked like double shifts, and it went till like 4:30 in the morning before it tapered off. And the manager was saying, yeah, like I was walking around going crazy. Like I actually had to go into the kitchen and cook stuff. And he was like, and then, I'm walking by and everybody's like, oh yeah, it's Pi Day. This is once in 100 years. He's like, I don't want to hear this anymore. I'm tired of hearing him. I don't know that he said that out loud, but he's just thinking, I've been working 15 hours. Like,
yeah, sadly, I didn't plan ahead, so I went and got some supermarket pies, because otherwise I would have found a bakery. But then when you go look like that afternoon, it's like you find out how few places are really like old school, make more than donuts or cupcakes type bakeries.
Right. That's why, yeah, once I realized like really late Friday night or early on Saturday that I had, my original plan was that I would go get a pie like Friday night and have it at the house on Saturday. Once I realized that I'd forgotten to do that, I was like, yeah, I don't think this is going to happen until the next day.
Well, the pie is still good. That's the nice part about it's not. Although the sad thing is, the day after Pi Day, you don't get like huge discounts on pies.
There were discounts.
Valentine's passes or Easter and candy's half off.
Clearance, pie clearance sale.
Pie is always in demand.
Like the aisle at the Target or the Eckerd's or the CVS with all of, the Pi Day decorations and pies all half off.
Pies a quarter off. Then it's not a circle anymore.
And I have to hold up for June 28th, 2031. That's the big Taw Day. Taw Day, depending on how you pronounce it.
Is that right? Is it?
Double pie.
Double pie? It's two pie. It's supposed to be like, there's a big pie versus Taw kind of, you know, battle right now. They're saying, you know, Tau's a little bit more, it appears in nature a little bit more, it's a little bit easier to deal with. Math is set up a little bit easier around that. So yes, that's 6.282031.
Huh. Well, so what do you get towed on Taw Day? What would be yeah. the thing you celebrate? I don't
Towed up? I'm not entirely sure.
Taw?
Towed up?
Taw. It's T-A-U. So it's, I've heard Taw. It pronounced Taw and then also Taw.
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 Papa Mau Mau.
Toe. So you just get towed.
Dow.
Park across the street from the radio station and get towed on Taw Day.
GIF. It's GIF.
Can you make a GIF for Taw Day?
The Taw.
Taw.
Yeah, I'm holding out for Pew Day.
I guess for people who've stuck around for the whole show or who are catching this part, if you have ideas for subjects that we can have, you know, have main conversations about, I think like last week Lee had mentioned about maybe we should do a sci-fi movie one.
I want to solve the earlier mystery. Hang on.
It's also another birthday today too. So 50 years for, you know, manned space flight, 30 years for...
It's either or.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Tower Taw,
depending on.
Yeah,
that's like whether it's primer or primer.
It's still primer.
It's
thank
primer.
You.
I
it's
think.
Primer.
I
say tower. But I've had different math professors that say it, and a lot of it I think comes down
British.
Like the accent. Yeah, it's a British thing. So
British
I've had Indian math professors.
So your primer is made out of aluminium, but your primer is made out of aluminum.
Yeah.
So 30-year anniversary today or yesterday? Anyone?
30 years.
30 years. 30 years.
Not us.
30.
GNU.
GNU.
Oh,
GNU.
Yeah.
30 years today, or 30 days. 30 years yesterday.
Wow. And
somewhere in here. Call it 30 years this month.
I would guess yesterday because I would think they would come up with it before their St. Patrick's Day hangover.
85. 95,
I believe
05,
it's, yeah, Stallman. I mean, he may not have believed in keeping time at the time, but, you know, yeah, so 30 years.
He wasn't able to keep time because there was no open source NTP
service. Yeah, we didn't have NTP yet.
The long now had already started. All right, well, like I was saying, if you have any ideas on subjects that you would like to hear us geek about, you know, throw us an email or use the contact form on the website or
yeah, feel free
like
to contact
that.
Us and let us know what you think. And if you did want to have certain topics discussed or questions answered, we'd be willing to take those via the contact form on geekradio.com. And if you have an idea for a topic of discussion and you want to submit that, that'd be awesome. We could do it that way and cover a number of different topics. I think cable cutting, which we covered pretty in depth in the first hour of the show, is something that's kind of getting more into the mainstream media as people are looking for ways to maybe save a little bit of money and also divest themselves of the corporate interests of a company like Comcast or any of the other big providers. They do seem to kind of have a stranglehold on it. I think they're, you know, a lot of this net neutrality discussion that we've had in weeks past kind of touches on that too, because Comcast has a vested interest in not having, you know, content that they're not providing streamed out over the internet connection.
And they're the ones putting in the most of the lobbying money too.
Right. So there's that.
And yeah. Some ideas I have been thinking about is, you know, we've got obviously the sort of sci-fi movie one from Lee, you know, everyday carry, you know, what kind of devices and that, you know, we've talked about travel before and we could revisit that, but like every, you know, stuff that people bring every day as far as what they carry around with them technology wise or, you know, just to be prepared for
zombie
whatever.
Apocalypse.
I carry around a haunted car with me.
But Christine.
Different kind of carry. Oh, that's, oh, never mind. I carry around a psychotic prom queen with me. Yes. Stephen King has too many
repressed religious girl who has psychic powers just waiting to be unleashed. All it takes is a bucket of pig's blood.
Let's see.
You know, disaster stuff, technology in a disaster. might be another interesting one.
We could read through all of the source code for Linux kernel, one show or two shows. That'd be fun.
Given that Houston is in, you know, Hurricane Alley, that might be another.
BCDR, cool, emergency preparedness, you know, hand crank radio stuff might be. Yeah, we're looking at that now. We're refreshing our BCDR plans.
Yeah, that's exciting. Let's talk about BC and DR planning.
a DR plan that I was amused by once when I was working for a big company. I was in England, and they had their building. They had taken lots of, you know, great effort to have this campus where they could, you know, where it was as disaster proof as possible. So they got power sources from two different power stations. So, you know, spent all this extra money to run, you know, high tension line from different stations so that, you know, one came in one side of the building and one came in the other. And they set up an offsite place that was like, you know, recording all the data for the servers and systems and that. And then they decided to test it one Saturday. And they, you know, which took a lot of effort because they had to turn off the power coming from both sides at the same time and simulate the kind of their offsite disaster recovery. And they said that it was great because the thing was so up to the second on the offsite replication of the data that it just replicated all the data going to hell when they turned off the power. It was real time, and so it real time screwed it up, and they had a nice backup of the data corruption that they got.
That's like having RAID mirroring, which is awesome because you've got two copies of everything, but then your RAID card fries and spews garbage to both of them.
Reminds me of like when the Windows emulators got good enough to where they actually started propagating Windows viruses. That's like when, okay, Wine, you're doing good. You can get infected.
So yeah, they did that on the building scale. So that was they finally, you know, they figured out that maybe having a several minute lag was probably better than real time.
Here's a good one for Houston. When the hurricane's imminent, you get the computer operations guy to grab all of the latest backup tapes, put them in his pickup, and then drive north.
Another possible topic, you know, and this would change. See, if we had drones, then you could give all the tapes to a drone and just send it off. Send off, fly, be free. Go find Wally and...
Oh, yeah, so no fly zone for drones at South by Southwest, which is kind of interesting just because of the crowded radio. It makes a lot of sense because most drones aren't really drones. They're remote-controlled, you know, RC kind of things. But, yeah, the frequency is just too crowded. You know, they do that if you go to, like, to RC races and stuff. Everyone gets, you know, a different frequency. Everything's kind of, you know, assigned. And even though a lot of the stuff is, you know, wireless and spread spectrum and frequency hopping to where they shouldn't collide, they do. So rather than, you know, a lot of drones flying out of the sky and hitting, you know, South Byers on the head, they've just said, nope.
Well, right. It was that or else say no hipsters at South by Southwest. And they
good luck
they
with
make
that.
Any money.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's the sound we were waiting for. We are out of time. And hopefully next week we will have a full crew again. Lee will be back with us. Are you coming to town, Pete?
I will probably try.
I may be
in
Boston.
I will probably try.
Yeah, I'm going to be gone,
well,
so if you could come in.
I can't guarantee it. Like, last week, I knew it was spring break and some of that, so I could make a pretty strong
commitment.
Where
are you going, Barrett?
I think I've got to be in Boston. I'm not entirely sure, but I think that's next week. I will find out.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone. This has been another exciting episode of Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
We'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Chris Daniel. your Harris County District Clerk, firefighters head into burning buildings while everyone heads out. Police officers put on protective vests each day at work. Members of the military are stationed in harm's way. What do they all have in common? They serve when called upon. Everyday folks like yourselves are called upon to occasionally perform a different role, jury service. A key principle of our nation is that our Constitution guarantees the right to be tried by the impartial jury. The Founding Fathers wisely understood that questions of liberty ought to rest with average citizens, not the government or one official. With people like you and your neighbors on juries, justice can be done. In a big city, you can easily start thinking, I'll just let the other guy across town go in for jury service. Nobody will miss me if I don't come. But here in Texas, we expect people to pull their own weight. When you get tapped on the shoulder, please honor the call to jury service. My name is Chris Daniel, your Harris County District Clerk, and I look forward to seeing you at the courthouse.
This is KPFT Houston.
KPFT's new morning lineup gives you an enlightened start to your day. Starting at 5, we begin your morning with The Attitude. Host Arnie Arneson brings you the latest news and analysis mixed in with humor and commentary. At 6, internationally renowned talk show host Tom Hartman brings conversation, debate, and more to get you warmed up for the day. At 7, it's time for Democracy Now! And award-winning journalist Amy Goodman's interviews and on-the-ground reports from hotspots around the globe. At 8, KPFT's informed morning program, Open Journal, brings you news and culture from our area. And at 9, the best and brightest voices, including Professor Richard Wolff, Dr. Michio Kaku, sports journalist Dave Zirin, and more, help you understand the day's news. You can view our complete program.